All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast, the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian and anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight we're doing a spicy meatball. Yes, it's American History X, and it's controversial movie when it came out. Lots of controversy surrounded it shortly after it came out, and it's been cropping up recently, as our guest has mentioned, in some of the pre-show bonus content available for our Patreon supporters. Go to actualanarchy.com/Patreon to send some money our way, and you'll get to see some of the pre-show and post-show bonus content that we put your way by doing that. This is episode 247 of the show. You can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/247. We will introduce our guest in a few moments as we get into the last night's sports of the show. But before we do that, let's say hello to Robert. How are things going over there on the east side?
What's up, D-Rock? Hello, everybody. Glad to be back on the show for another episode. It's really smoky. There's a whole lot of fires nearby. There's one really, really big one up on Mount Bonaparte, which is one of my favorite recreation areas. And in fact, they have closed my favorite mountain biking trail due to risk of fire. So that's kind of a bummer for me. I've had to go far and wide to hit some trails that are still open. But otherwise, things are good. Things are fantastic, Daniel. I'm eating right, you know. I'm taking care of my body, you know. Just trying to change shape, you know. I'm not shooting a lot of hoops, but, you know.
Taking your vitamins.
I'm taking my vitamins. It's good.
All right, and you're getting that D all over your...
I'm getting a lot of D all over my face, neck, and chest. It's fantastic.
All right, I hear that's good for you. I hear that it's a necessary thing.
Doctors recommend it. So do it. You got to do it. It's
not that we're doctors. We're saying that we're relaying information from doctors who would have said this. We got to cover all our bases, man.
I don't recall ever claiming to be a doctor. I don't recall ever claiming to be an expert at anything.
Not even movie reviews.
Clearly not movie reviews. 100%. Definitely not.
Right. I mean, we've had 246 preceding examples of how bad we are at this.
Yeah. If there's ever needs to be like, there's a trial that we got so much evidence in our favor that look, these guys are idiots. They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. Haven't we made it abundantly clear throughout the tenure of our show here that we don't know what the fuck we're talking about, but we still have a good time doing it. And so that's why we keep at it.
That's probably the reason.
Yeah, good enough.
Yeah.
So anyway, we have an exciting guest. He reached out to us because he's a fan of the show. I know they're out there. It surprised me too. Somebody actually listened to the show, liked what we did, and they're here to come on and talk about this movie, American History X. So let's introduce him in the last narrative portion of the show right after these messages. Everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson, and I are the Last Nighters. You can find us at lastnighters.com. And tonight we're talking American History X. This is episode 190 of the show. You can find the show notes more at lastnighters.com/190. Now, for our guest tonight, this is a selection that he made, and he is Nick, who is the producer and co-host of The Status Quo, and you can find that at thestatusquo.net. And he also creates music that is found in many popular podcasts. And you can find that stuff over at nickwhitenoise.com. And Nick, welcome to the show. Why don't you just tell anyone anything else that I might have missed in the little intro, and what made you pick this movie?
What's up, man? Thanks for inviting me on. I think you got it. You know, I just have been a fan of this movie for a long time, and I've... recently saw that, well, I looked it up, and there's a lot of people talking about this movie saying that it's more relevant now than ever, which I find hilarious because they probably think it's more relevant now than ever for the complete wrong reasons. But I don't know. I've never heard like a take on this movie from somebody who actually believes in liberty. So, yeah, I don't know. I figure a couple libertarian guys who do a movie podcast, why not reach out?
All right. Well, that's a tall order because I don't know how good we are at what we do here, but this should be a lot of fun. And it's a movie I hadn't seen in probably a decade and a half or so. So it was good to go back and watch it again. And I think it holds up really well. It's a well done movie. So thank you for suggesting it. It is one that I've been wanting to do for a while, but I also consider it kind of a third rail, as I'm sure we'll get into some of those points as we continue on here. But how we start off, Robert, is with some sound effects. American History X.
X, X, X. X going to give it to you.
And no, I'm going to pull up the description, the Google description. I think that's, is that showing up yet? No, not yet. How about now? How you like me now? There it is. Okay, so Google description reads, American History X came out 1998, got an 8.5 out of 10 on that IMDb, 83% Rotten Tomatoes, 62% on Metacritic, and 93% of Google users like it. The description reads, living a life marked by violence and racism, neo-Nazi Derek Vineyard, played by Edward Norton, finally goes to prison after killing two black youths who tried to steal his car. Upon his release, Derek vows to change his ways. He hopes to prevent his younger brother, Danny, played by Eddie Furlong, who idolizes Derek, from following in his footsteps. As he struggles with his own deeply ingrained prejudices and watches their mother grow sicker, Derek wonders if his family can overcome a lifetime of hate. Came out October 30, 1998, directed by Tony Kaye, and significant editing by Ed Norton, actually. And there's some controversy around that where Tony Kaye, the director, disowned the film and got blacklisted in Hollywood as a result of his difficulties in being hard to work with. But I think he did a fine film here. And Robert, let's go to you for your opening salvo, please.
All right. Well, I don't know if I'm qualified to talk about this film, but I'll do my best. I'm sure that there are some big brains out there that have said some very smart things, but all I've done is I've watched the film. I remember seeing it a long time ago. And the thing that stood out to me, as I recall, is just the initial carjacking killing. And then there's some prison stuff and then some partying and that's about it. Maybe the death at the end. But watching it again recently, I was struck by how well written it was. I can't necessarily speak to how accurate, you know, the neo-Nazi rally meetings are or what exactly their ideology is or, you know, that kind of thing. The main thing that I was struck by, and I do want to get into the, you know, the property rights issues, the libertarian aspects, the NAP, that kind of thing with the killings and other things like that. But I was mostly a little bit disappointed because it seemed to be that Derek was this, you know, he's this guy, he's a pretty bright guy and he has some tragedy in his life where his father is killed by some gangbangers or something like that. He's trying to put out a fire. So he's got some trauma in his life and he falls under the tutelage of this neo-Nazi propagandist guy who kind of like, whatever, he has this little clan of Nazis wannabe people. But Derek really is this almost a positive, he's like almost like the turning your life around kind of a person, like, no, be a shining beacon of what a person could be proud of your race and that kind of thing. If he was a black guy and he was, yeah, I'm going to be the best I can be and I love being black and blah, 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 then I don't know anybody would have a problem with this. But since it's a white guy and he hates all these other groups, then we're like, yeah, this is, I'm with him on the, you know, eat right, eat vegetables, take your vitamins, work out, that kind of stuff. But
when work hard and care about your community, like those are some of the other things he sort of talked about.
Right. Absolutely. And one of my problems with the movie is because there's a scene and I really want to dig into this scene. I don't remember all the dialogue, hardly any of it really, but there's a dinner scene where they're arguing about the Rodney King thing. And I think he actually makes a lot of strong points about personal responsibility and I don't remember all the stuff, but I remember him making a lot of strong points, but then he takes it to the next level where I wouldn't go. And at the end of the movie, he renounces like all of that, like everything. He's like, I'm just done with it. I'm not going to be a part of this neo-Nazi stuff anymore. And from an audience perspective, or at least from my perspective, I'm left to wonder, what exactly is he renouncing? Is he renouncing just hanging out with these neo-Nazi people? Because that's what he physically actually does. He's going to move on with his life. He's not going to hang out with these neo-Nazis anymore. But is he like renouncing all his previous ideas? Because some of those ideas are pretty good.
Whoa.
They were. I'm not into it with all the Hitler loving stuff, obviously. But taking care of yourself, taking care of your community,
mm-hmm.
having personal responsibility, owning up for your actions and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but in present age, right, those are actually signs of quote-unquote white supremacy now. Sure, so that's one of the
being
things
on time.
Stood out to me because it felt like just because we know he's the bad guy in the film. I mean, yeah, he has this redemptive arc, but just going into it, you know, he's the bad guy with the bad ideas, yet he's making a lot of points that an objective viewer would be like, yeah, that's a not awful point. You know, he maybe takes it too far or attributes malice or causation and hatred. So he takes it, you know, several steps too far, but it almost is like this movie as a media, as a vehicle of promulgating ideas into the culture is almost making all of those topics third rails. Like just because the
By association type stuff. Right.
Right. So like say at the end where the affirmative action speech from the dad.
Yeah. Like I definitely want to talk about that.
That's supposed to be the culmination of here's where Derek got his bad ideas.
That's where it started. It all started with questioning affirmative action. And that started the ball rolling of him being a neo-Nazi.
Right.
It's the slippery slope gateway drug to being a skinhead.
Right. So anyway, I didn't mean to derail you, but I just wanted to make that point that it really felt like culturally this movie is there to sort of frame the debate of what's acceptable and what's not. And so it makes certain subjects taboo, even though they are, I mean, almost anything should be open to debate. I know that that's not how the world works anymore. But it seems to me that you should be able to articulate ideas and explore ideas and learn about things and have opinions.
Right. You know? I mean, that's one of the things I liked about the movie was that they turned Derek, they had him such a well-written character that they made him intelligent. They made him not a cartoon, like cartoonishly evil. Like they had a really strong point of view. He had reasons, justifiable reasons for why he believed the way he did. But you're right. He is the villain character. So he takes it to the next level, right? That where most people would not go, takes it to that extreme. But he's not a cartoon. He's a complex protagonist / villain character that I think he's entirely relatable to the audience. So in that sense, I think he's highly well written. Whereas some of the ancillary characters, we don't get enough screen time for them to be really, you know, well written. They're just kind of small time characters. We really just get Derek and kind of his brother, kind of maybe, and then we don't really get many other people.
We get a little of the sister and the mother and Ethan right. Suppley a little bit.
A little bit, but not, it's mostly just Derek's story. Anyway, it's good. I want to say that, but you're right. I don't like the way either the filmmaker or the leftists who have like glommed onto this film to say, look, neo-Nazi bad. And this is like your point, like, and all these things that he's talking about are associated with Nazism. Like it goes back to the Larkin Rose video. Like it can happen here. I think it's called Nazis bad.
Right.
Where it's like the difference between the Nazis and like the US government or any necessarily government is just like one degree of separation. Like this is just a slight little difference. Otherwise it's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, like he's like a normal person, but he takes it that little step further where you're like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Because otherwise he's a fairly rational, intelligent human being, right? And even right. the history professor guy really likes him, even though he's a neo-Nazi guy.
Right, which, and he seemed to like the
son, too, or the younger brother.
Yeah, and they liked him as well. Like, they had a mutual respect for him. It was like, okay. Nick, we'll bring in just a second here, but one final point I wanted to make is that it's almost as if all the Trump Orange Man Bad syndrome that we started seeing in 2014, 2015, up to the 2016 election, it's almost as if all of those Never Trumper Orange Man Bads, they saw this movie, they saw him talking about similar things. They're like, oh, well, of course, he's a white supremacist Nazi skinhead Orange Man.
Same with Jordan Peterson. Like, he right. talks a lot about self-improvement, cleaning your room, you know, taking care of yourself and your community. Sounds like Derek, except for the little bit extra.
Right, right. And to your point earlier about, you know, imagine if it was a black guy or someone else saying these things and doing these things. I like to do that thought exercise in my head when I see, like, news articles talking about something being bad or something being taboo. Well, what if you just changed one of the words? Is it still bad? You know, and that is a good way of, like, divining, okay, what is the core of something? Is it the principle at play, or is it special, you know, special pleading?
Indeed, Daniel. Indeed. Anyway, Nick, do you have any comments on our messy little intro?
Yeah.
Here?
Well, I'm glad Robert went first and made it seem a little more, because I didn't want to seem like, oh man, I'm such a fan of this movie. It's like that sounds a little creepy. I am a big fan of the movie, not. Because I'm like a white supremacist train, but yeah, I mean, you know, I think that from the get-go, the point was to make Derek a very sympathetic character, actually, because, like, the very first scene, he's like defending his home from violent robbers, essentially, who have guns, which is like a weird, like, that when I just watched it, I was like, huh, they're really trying to make you root for this guy who has a swastika on his chest. I'm assuming, because I was not because of the swastika, because, like, you know, I'm a libertarian. I've been in the gun circles and stuff like that. So, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, what would you, like, the first guy he shot was the most justified, and the second guy he shot and later did the worst thing ever in film, too. That was
my teeth still hurt just from that.
Yeah, that was brutal. That wasn't justified. And then I think shooting the guy in the car or whatever, I don't think that was really justified either. He was fleeing away. But, like, I think it was supposed to make you, like, sympathetic to him because he's defending his home. And then also I think the movie's interesting because in a way it's kind of like I mean pretty much Derek is the main character, but Danny's like the narrator, you know, and it's kind of like it starts off with him in school and he's writing the paper American History X, so it's kind of like who's the main character, who's the story, but obviously it's mostly about Derek. There's, you know, that's not a huge important detail, but like yeah, I mean, I don't know. And I thought this too, when they were having that the dinner scene that you were talking about, Robert, with Rodney King, that kind of sounds a lot like what right wingers talk about George Floyd today. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of lame, where he's like, well, he's breaking the law, so who cares? You know, they can just kill him. I'm like, well, yeah, George Floyd might have been a piece of shit, but, you know, maybe not. You don't have to, like, crush his lungs or whatever. Maybe doing the drugs influenced it, but, like, you know, I don't know. I'm not a fan of that. So there's some similarities, but then, yeah, he does just take it that extra bit. He's got the tattoo. He says the N word and the K word and stuff like that. And, like, you know, but everything else. Yeah. Like the dad, you know, whenever I watch this movie with, like, family members around or something, they're like, oh, he's actually, what's the problem with this? He's making a great point. And I'm like, well, just wait like 5 seconds. And then, yeah. But, yeah. I mean, most of it is, like, good points. It's just, it's, and then it ends in, like, the problem is, like, collectivism. It's like, well, black, bad. It's like, there's no thought of, like, even the sister in the scene with the Rodney King stuff, she was talking about systemic problems. It's like, yeah, there have been systemic problems. That's not the cause of every problem ever, but, like, there have been, so it's worth talking about. He just blows it off. Like, that's pretty lame. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, I'm a fan of it. I think it actually makes you, I think the overall message of, like, being a racist / being a collectivist is bad is, like, a good message. I mean, I'm not rolling my eyes at the movie because it's telling me not to be a Nazi. I'm rolling my eyes at the fact that society is like, oh my God, there's Nazis everywhere. Like in the movie American History X. It's like, no, there isn't.
You know, right.
Yeah. There's like a few thousand of these guys. And like you were saying in the pre-show, they're now into what, paganism or something like that. Or at least some of them are, or some offshoot of them are.
I think all that stuff is sort of more like a justification of like the overall, like, deep ideology. And it's almost not worth talking about, but it would be a cool, like, all the stuff that they believe it, like, and that's probably only the smart ones, like the really smart ones. Like, a Derek might have believed this stuff if he were, he might have believed this stuff, you know, as far as I know. Cause it's like a lot of, I listened to like 8 hours worth of YouTube videos. Cause it was, not because I was like, oh, this is awesome. I was just like, oh, this is like a Lord of the Rings type of movie or something. The way they're going on about like their whole history. So I was like, that's kind of cool, you know, but that's a totally separate conversation. It's, you know, I doubt any of them today. Actually, there's probably like 12 of them who think this stuff, and they're probably like the higher ups, you know?
Well, it is interesting. I mean, the entire rise of gangs at all, or especially like prison gangs, it's for, you know, vulnerable individuals to seek protection from anybody, really, like anybody that's willing to have them, for the most part. Like, even in when he goes into jail, he's not a member of any gang, but everybody says, and everybody pretty much understands, that you have to join up with somebody. You need somebody to watch your back, protect you, or else you're basically vulnerable, at risk for anybody that wants to take you out or do harm to you. And that's a lot of the same is true for youths. Like, I mean, I don't know, where's he growing up here in, like, Los Angeles?
Venice Beach or something?
Yeah, Venice Beach. So he's in, like, the L.A. area, I think.
Which can get pretty rough. I mean,
well, they said at the beginning of the movie, like, oh, this used to be a great place. Now there's a lot of gangs. So, yeah, I mean, you kind of got to pick a side, I guess, you know?
Right. And I think the gangs and maybe even this Nazi ideology kind of gives, and much in the same way that, what are those? I can't remember the name, but they're those, they're the Black Zionists or something like that, that you're around yelling at people.
Oh, the Black Hebrew Israelites.
There you go. Those are the guys. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're like, you know, they give people, you know, disaffected, young, vulnerable kids a sense of identity, a sense of pride in a history, whether that's their history or not or something, but they identify with that. So what you were talking about with them researching history of the Aryans and that sort of thing, it's something to look at, I guess, and point to and be like, oh, I come from a long line of awesome people. So I could see the appeal in the message, but, you know, obviously I'm not down with the collectivist, racist, authoritarian bullshit crap.
Or what the Nazis actually did. And that's what a lot of that research is kind of ends up at. Like, cause there are legitimate, I guess, Asatru, that's the religion, believers who are not down with all of the racist stuff. Like, they like denounce white supremacists, but they actually still believe in like the fact that they believe that Aryans were like white giants who actually built the pyramids and stuff like that. Like, they still believe that, but that, you know, if you were going to believe in that religion, like, and they're probably the left wingers of that religion, like, that's probably the way you should believe in it, because it's pretty pointless to be like, well, just because I believe some white Aryans built the pyramids and stuff, that doesn't mean that we have the right to like invade Poland and France and, you know, kill a bunch of people. Like, that's kind of a stretch.
Right. And I either of you guys actually listened to a translated Hitler speech, because I imagine I imagine that, you know, a fair amount of it is, you know, blaming the Jews for all the ills of Germany, the blaming the French and the blaming the Treaty of Versailles for the World War One stuff, the what happened to Germany after World War One, but and then also blaming the Jews for all the financial shenanigans that they can get involved with. But a lot of it, I think, plays up on the history and the idea of the Aryan Superman and kind of this self-empowerment message of, yes, we are Germans, we are awesome, kind of the same message that like these identitarian gang groups give to their people. Like, yes, we are awesome. We can do things. You know, you're not a loser. It's an old message. And it seems to be able to be used against people by some twisted megalomaniacs to strong effect throughout history.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they basically... I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm not too familiar with the translated works of A.H., but I have seen a speech, like somebody went to a campus and got a bunch of people cheering, and he was basically saying Hitler quotes. And it was all these progressive leftists who were like cheering him on because, I mean, they're cherry picked, obviously. So they're things that they would advocate for.
It's the socialist bits.
Yeah, yeah. And you also see a lot of that with the Hitlerian economic policy. It's basically like what we have here in the U.S. You know, this corporate sort of merging with government and self, you know, regulating their own industries through experts and things like that. Tom Woods had a speech on the economics of Hitler's Germany that, I mean, it was basically like Bernie Sanders' economic plan, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I know, I mean, as we know, that Germany was forced to pay all those war reparations for World War I, and they were massive. So anybody that came along and kind of riled up, got everybody's confidence back. It was probably a welcome message for everybody.
Yeah. And then there's the, you know, blaming a group of people, right? Having the scapegoat and then depersoning them, othering them, which I don't know, history's repeating and or rhyming these days. But you get in trouble for saying that even. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, hopefully you guys don't get deplatformed. And also, like, man, I mean... To be honest, I would rather, because like this is a point that I thought that I came, because like the Nazis, I don't even really call them Nazis today. I mean, the NRX, like, you know, alt-right guys of today, I would much rather have them than like the dudes from like this movie. Because I think there actually was kind of a punk rock, hardcore, like Nazi, they're pretty violent in like the 80s and 90s type of thing. But like the dudes today are just like, oh yeah, I just want to, I believe my weird beliefs, but like, I just want to prove how like legit I am. I work out a lot. I drive a motorcycle and like, I love my family. It's like, okay, well, and I hate whatever race and I'll be a troll online and just like make fun of them online. And that's my, you know, it's like, okay, well I can live with that, you know, versus like the actual Nazis, you know, that's basically the whole.
Right, because it sort of takes away a lot of the collectivizing and the downstream of the political, you know, apparatus.
Yeah, affecting they have no things. Political power.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you brought up the dinner. I know Robert wanted to get into that a little bit. I just wanted to make one point, and that is the sister who's like, "What about the inequities and the systemic problems that cause these problems?" And yes, while there are certainly systemic problems that cause these things, and there are things that in popular culture or in the mainstream narrative are called systemic racism, but in my opinion, those things are not the actual systemic racism. Like, that's sort of like this red herring. The actual systemic racism is the drug war. It's regulations. It's licensing to, you know, have a hair salon. It's things that take away opportunities that people would otherwise have had. So when you take away their opportunities, they're left with fewer options. And then you have this illicit drug trade that looks pretty lucrative. And, you know, you're off to the races as far as going down a bad path because all of the above board paths have been regulated away from you.
Right. And then you have the violence because you can't exactly go to the cops with your inner gang issues. It's definitely explainable through the fault of governments.
Right.
The
and
vast
whether it's their intention
things,
or
the
not.
Vast majority of things.
And it may or may not be their intention, but it is a likely outcome.
It sets the stage. It provides the incentives.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, it's just when I usually hear like people talk about systemic racism, my gut reaction is like, what are you talking about? And then usually what they're talking about isn't like real, like capitalism is the problem or whatever. But there are, you know, systemic, there are government sponsored institutions and bureaucracies that are actually creating these, a lot of these problems.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, you know, they end up sounding like the opposite of what's his face, Derek's dad. I mean, it's because like Derek's dad is, you know, like they'll say like, oh, well, why is there enough black people in so-and-so industry? It's like, well, maybe they didn't want to do that. You know, there's not that, you know, there's way less black people. So, you know, but is that, you know, his, and that's the thing about the movie is like, it makes a lot of legit points. And I don't think they put that in there, you know, entirely to, I guess they could, but I don't think they necessarily put them in there to make all of their good points automatically be bad just because they're associated with it. I mean, if they're like super, super leftists, then maybe, but they make, but like, there's so many people who I know who don't, they love the movie and they're not like raging leftists, you know, they're like, oh yeah, they make some good points, but yeah, obviously it's bad to be a Nazi. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, you know, it's, but yeah, I just think the movie makes so many good points and then they just go off the cliff, you know, of collectivism, violent. It's really the violence. I mean, it's, if it's voluntary, like they can be voluntary white supremacists and that's like, okay, you guys are losers, but whatever. Like that's how the not, that's like how the NRX dudes are today. Like the dudes with the, they will not replace us, dude. It's like they had one rally, big deal. They're basically nonviolent from, except for the guy with the, you know, synagogue shooting or whatever, but that was horrible. But like most of them are just nonviolent, just whatever, you know, that they have no political power whatsoever.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that, at one point Derek is, he is, like leading a meeting. He's like on some basketball court and he's got some guys and it's like at night and he's giving everybody like a powwow speech, like a rah, rah powwow speech. And he's mostly complaining about government policies. About what, like, he's talking about how, what was he? I don't even remember all the things. I probably should have taken more notes, but I think he was talking about immigration. He talked about immigration a lot and welfare and that kind of thing a lot and a crime. But, you know, I enjoy Derek for his like self-help message and like, hey, man, take care of yourself, be a shining example, a beacon, whatever, that kind of thing. But then when he starts blaming disparate groups as the cause, that's what my big problem with a lot of these Nazis is that they blame these other groups for the ills of society and the ills of like their own problems. Like I can't succeed because the Jew is keeping me down or something like that. I mean, I don't know. They probably don't use that language. They'll probably make a more nuanced point than that. But what they're seem to be essentially saying is that it's not my fault. And it's kind of at odds with their self-help message, like be a shining example, but yet there's all these problems caused by these other. I mean, that's, first of all, that's something I do all the time. I also talk about a self-help message, and I also claim that there are all these problems created by these other groups, mostly by governments. I think maybe because I'm, I don't even know, what's my point here?
That well, they don't have to be mutually exclusive, Robert. I mean, you can be, you know, doing all the right things and still be getting screwed over.
Right. So are you saying that you agree with Derek in that situation then?
Well, I'm just saying that even if he's talking about this empowering message, it doesn't exclude him from saying that there are all these problems caused by these government policies.
Like, right. But he's also talking, right. Those are not mutually exclusive, but he's also talking about, I don't remember, if, did he actually say the Jews were doing something or the blacks were doing something or the Latinos were doing something? I forget, but he was saying things like that to that extent, right?
Mm.
No?
Yeah, I wasn't taking all the notes on all the rhetoric.
I just remember he was saying like, oh, hey, you used to work here and then this Mexican dude started working here and took your job. He took your job, stuff like that. So,
yeah, and then they raided that store, which was pretty violent. I mean, there was a guy who was going to defend with a firearm. So, I mean, that could have gotten deadly.
So yeah, I wouldn't he had say every these... right to defend it with a firearm.
Yeah. So it's weird because, like, Nick, earlier you were saying, like, the area he was growing up in used to be nice, and then these gangs moved in. And so then they formed a gang that sort of, like, restored some level of balance. But it seems like it didn't actually improve the situation overall. It just made sure that there were some competing powers. So it's not like Venice Beach got better all of a sudden. It just got, like, they didn't feel so outnumbered being the way they were versus the way, you know, the other groups were. But it's not like anything was really much improved overall. It's not like Venice Beach became a nice area again.
And it seems kind of like a Cold War situation, right? Where you've got this rise of power, grouping of power. And then to respond to that, these guys group up and gather up into a gang to kind of have this detente where it's almost a mutually assured destruction. Like, nobody starts anything because they know there'll be severe repercussions.
There's minor skirmishes. They settle certain things on the basketball court.
How all things should be settled. Like, all wars should be handled on the court. Yeah, you guys get East Germany if I win this game.
Yeah, that was probably the most unrealistic scene. Well, a white dude and a really fat white dude, and then taking on these like super athletic black dudes at basketball. Yeah, that was not realistic. But again, it's like one of the scenes where you're like, I'm rooting for this guy, not because he has a swastika, but because clearly he's an underdog. You know, it's like he's by all rights should lose. Not, and I don't support like his end game with winning, but like, you know, I don't know. They all, and that'll be like another libertarian thing. Oh, well, they, you know, mutually agreed to it. You know, yeah, I think if they mutually agree to it, I mean, it's still a little messed up, but.
Well, now what's messed up?
That they agreed, like, all right, if we win, the black dude's got to leave, or if we lose, the white dude's got to leave, and like the black dude was like, all right, cool, I'll take that bet, you know. So,
oh, like him speaking for all the other black dudes, is that what you mean?
Well, it's just messed up the implication. It's just like, all right, a certain race can't hang out here now. Yeah, it is. It is for him speaking for all the other blacks. So yeah, and what if some black kid comes to play and he doesn't know that he made that bet? I guess, but.
Yeah, they can only speak for like their own group, right? The four or five of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I'd rather everybody be able to get along, but
Ronnie King quote. Why can't we all just get along?
Why can't we all just get along? But I am a firm believer in property rights, and sometimes we can't just all get along. Sometimes we do have differences, and maybe we should separate voluntarily.
Absolutely. Segregation. It's public property though, so what do you do there?
Shouldn't be public property, but you're right, there is public.
The basketball court is probably like a public park, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I'm as like property rights as any guy out there, but like I think like we can talk all day about like, oh, this wasn't realistic or that, well, whatever, but it's like they made the movie, so in terms of the movie, I mean, it's like, yeah, that's kind of a dick move to like even make that bet, because especially because the black dudes were like, oh, well, we'll totally win. So, yeah, it's laughable that you'd even think we'd lose, but they lost. So it was like, oh, you guys got to leave, which added to more racial tension, you know, not that.
Right.
It
probably maybe down the road added to more racial tension, because then you're not interacting and like having fun together playing basketball. Elbowing each other in the face. But yeah, right. It ended the conflict there that day, though. Like, I don't know if the bet should have been, hey, you guys got to leave for today.
That's a good way to think about it, actually. It was a peaceful, you know, that's the way they peacefully ended it. But the best thing about that scene, though, I always thought this was kind of, it was actually really sad about the scene to me. It's like, Derek is really about the game. Like, and you can tell he's like, he respects the game, and even like when the dude elbowed him, they were like, hey, you got to call foul or offense or whatever on him, and he's like, well, it's game point, you know, that's the street rules, you know, we don't do that out here. And they're like, oh, what, you can't let them get away with that. And it's like, he really respects the game overall. You could tell later on he's chatting with his prison buddy about basketball. He's stoked about it. So it's just sad, because it's like those dudes might have, you know, gotten along, but just because of their collective is bullshit, because both of them aren't heroes, you know. So yeah,
Yeah, yeah. And that's just an example of Derek, who later on went in the prison and he sees some of the guys in his clique going to some of the other cliques and doing deals. He's like, whoa, 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 this isn't, he's not a true believer in this philosophy. So it's showing us that while Derek's principles might be kind of fucked up, at least he has them. And he's pretty adamant to adhering to them. Like he's a true believer.
He got really autistic about it.
Yeah. It risked his life, you know, and he popped his shower cherry in that.
Yeah. I thought that was a little bit unrealistic because I think he was smart enough that he should have realized that a lot of people were just in it for protection. Like if I went to a prison, I would be tempted to join some gang, not because
would.
Of what they believe, but because I don't want to get raped in the shower, you know, repeatedly.
Yeah,
or beat up in the workout yard or whatever, or shanked in the shower, wherever, you know, it's a nasty place. You need allies.
Yeah. And Nick, to your point, Nick, about, maybe in another situation, he would have got along with that basketball guy. We see that when he's doing the laundry duty, it takes like a year of that. What's his name? Montrell or something like that. He's talking the whole time and Derek's just like quiet, just like stonewalling him, just doing the work. And then after about a year, he finally gets him to start laughing. And then by the end of it, they're very friendly. Like they're getting along. And that guy actually ends up saving his ass until he can get out of the prison.
Right. Because Derek, how did he lose the support of his gang? Because they beat him up. Why did they beat him up? Why did they rape him again? I forget.
It had to do with what Daniel was saying about like the when he was being like super, super principled and one of the other guys in the group was doing drug deals with like a Mexican guy. And he's like, hey, what the hell? This is bullshit. We can't support him. And the dude gave him like the Zig Heil thing and he just walked away. So they were like, all right, he's a punk. Let's teach him a lesson, basically.
So he didn't Zig Heil back. So then they're like, we're going to rape you?
There were like two or three things that Derek did to let them know that he wasn't that he was going to preach at them or be overly principled versus what they wanted to do, which was just they're in this loose coalition for the protection, you know, the mutual protection, whereas he's in it because these are the skinhead guys, so they must believe in the skinhead stuff, and he's still like big into that. And when he realizes that they're not, he doesn't want to associate with them anymore. So he's like sort of foregoing that protection and shunning them. And he pays a price for it, you know?
Yeah. And when he gets in there, he kind of acts, you know, they kind of absorb him like he's hot shit. Like they're like, oh, we heard about you, you know, brother. And, you know, like, come on, like, obviously you're going to hang with us. You know, I don't know if were they like, oh, yes, he killed, you know, a black, he curb stomped a black dude. I don't know if they were really like, they're just like, oh, here's another guy to add to our gang, I guess, who's violent, you know?
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you guys, if it's clear to you who the guy who was curb stomped was he the guy who he was playing with basketball earlier?
That was definitely him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I understood it to be.
And
I
then
think, I think, yeah, cause it's hair.
Okay. It's and then at hair. The end, when Danny gets shot, when I was watching the movie, I'm like, he got shot because he stood up to that group of guys who was beating up the other dude in the bathroom and he blew smoke in his face.
Right.
But then I saw a note online where it says, why did Danny get shot at the end? They said that it's because that guy was the younger brother of the guy who got curb stomped.
Well, that guy that shot him was also at the basketball game, but I don't know.
That was a separate separate basketball game. Like all the black and white is all,
in the past, yeah.
Yeah, and the basketball court scene where Eddie Furlong is seen by the guy who ends up shooting him is present day, like color version.
Yeah. The funny thing about the black and white scenes, I read this recently, it's kind of silly, but I guess it makes sense. It's like the past, everything's black and white. And then now it's like all in color, like you see the real big picture. Like it was
different
black
shades.
And white. Yeah, like that was the whole point. Maybe that wasn't the point, but yeah, the basketball game where he saw the kid from school, like the bully, that I think those were a different set of guys who were, you know, a few years later. But He might be related to the guy who got shot. I mean,
well, that's what the internet
said. He
doesn't
need to
be. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could be just he got shot because he was on the guy's radar.
It was revenge.
They definitely know about his older brother. I'm sure they know about his older brother, you know, in school, you know.
Well, if that's the case, then the movie didn't do a good enough job explaining that because it felt.
It felt something. Yep. You're muted. Oh, there you go.
My cable got unplugged. Sorry, guys.
Okay. It felt something.
It felt that scene felt unearned. Like, I didn't see it coming, and they wanted it to be a surprise. But I think if from an audience perspective, you need to feel dread that killing is coming. And I did not feel that at all.
Oh, I did. I think that they were doing a couple of things. One, they had that group of guys drive by the house and do finger guns at the house. And there was another scene where
he was
saying
the older group, older guys.
No.
He was with them. He was actually with the guy because he was with the same guy. Like, I'm assuming that guy he was with at the basketball court was like his brother or something. Cause he's like, hey, is that the, you know, punk ass white boy who was messing with you at school today?
Yeah.
And then later on.
Yeah, that was at the basketball game, right?
Yeah, the first one and, you know, in color. And then later on, yeah, they're driving past their house and they're doing the finger guns. But actually, you could kind of tell that kid, the younger kid, he was kind of like, in my opinion, I think the younger kid was just trying to be a bully. He was trying to be cool, but I don't think he got to the point yet where he was like a violent killer or anything. He kind of didn't. I don't know. Maybe I read too much into it, but like, I just watched the scene where they drove past and he seemed like he's like, let's just forget about him. That's the kind of face he made. He was like, man, whatever.
Well, and then when it happens, we're seeing Edward Norton feeling like he's under threat, right? There's a whole lot of like looking around. And so there's all this tension being built up that leads us up to, and it's sort of like a head fake, right? It's like, oh, we're supposed to be worried about Edward Norton getting somebody coming after him for what he had done at that party the night before. But then
that's
it's like
it.
This sort of surprise that it's Eddie Furlong who gets shot. But there is some foreshadowing to Furlong getting shot, at least two or three instances of that sort of being laid out. But there's that head fake at the end.
Do you really think that it was that Edward Furlong had done anything to justify being shot in the bathroom at the end?
Not at all.
But he did disrespect that guy who was bullying
bully in school.
He was bullying the older brother of the dude from that 70s show, actually, in real life.
Really?
The guy who from Malcolm in the Middle, like the oldest brother. That's who that actor is. I don't have like a weird thing with fate. Yeah, that was that guy. But anyways, yeah.
Okay, anyway.
And I don't think it necessarily needs to have that much of an explanation. Like, I know when I was a young man, I did a lot of stupid shit because I thought it would be, I don't know, fun, dangerous, exciting, whatever. And that was in a small town, not in, you know, a gang area.
So what was the motivation for the kid to shoot Edward Furlong at the end?
That he had been disrespected.
So he was disrespected, so he goes straight to murder.
Yeah.
Okay. If that's good enough motivation for you, that's fine. It was not good enough motivation for me.
It's got to be a combination though of like the disrespect and the fact that his brother is who he is. I would think.
If we got a scene where the kid like idolized his big brother and his big brother was like, what you got to do is you got to kill that mother.
Yeah.
Because you can't let him disrespect you like that. Blah 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 blah. Okay, maybe it's a little on the nose. I'm sure a better writer would, you know, take a second pass at that dialogue right there. But you know what I'm saying? Like, give me a little bit more to make that scene earned instead of, okay.
Yeah, as it plays out, it just kind of happens. And they do make you think it's going to be
violence. But I bet you everybody that kills anybody, even if they're a young, dumb kid, they feel like they've got good reasons for doing it at the time. Maybe they, of course, I'm sure that a lot of them regret it afterwards, hopefully. But at the time, people feel what they have are good motivations for doing things.
Like, and they want to get into the gang?
Maybe it's a gang initiation thing and you had to kill somebody. That would have been a great scene to have in this film. And then there would have been some drama about whether or not he's going to do it or not. But I see what, maybe this is part of the edit of the Edward Norton or what's his name? Editing.
They could have easily cut out some pivotal thing there.
The director actually had
the director's thing. Cut was going to be shorter, only be 90 minutes. And
really?
And they asked him to add some scenes back in or something like that. And they gave him 8 weeks to do it. And then he didn't do it. And so then Ed Norton did it and he added a bunch of stuff that like develops the relationship between Danny and Derek. So this is really like, it's a redemption story sort of for both of them, but a different kind of spaces on their arcs. Right. Cause by the end of it, Danny has kind of seen the light, right? He's written this paper, American History X, which I didn't understand what the name of the movie signified until I looked it up today. The X is from Malcolm X because he used X because he didn't want to use a name that was given to him by white culture. So X is an unknown variable in mathematics. So that's why X. So that's why American History X, American History Unknown. I didn't know that until today. So good on me for a 22-year-old
still learning
movie. Still learning.
40 years old that he's still learning.
Still learning a few things. Anyway, it seemed at the end that Danny was like, coming around, right? He was now going to change his ways and be a good dude, sort of like Derek had turned around from his prison stint.
Yeah, there's that scene where they tear down all the Nazi stuff off the walls. I didn't really feel like that was earned either. I could see why Edward Norton wouldn't do it, but I didn't see why Edward Furlong would want to do it necessarily after just like that one conversation with his brother saying that he was raped by some neo-Nazis in prison. I don't know. Maybe. But I understand the movie can't be 15 hours long either. So
I think you gotta have his
characters do some things.
I think Danny Edward Furlong's character, he kind of wasn't fully there like Derek was. Like there was that scene where Seth, who is played by Ethan Suplee, big dude, he's like, "Hey, asshole, tell me who you hate and all this stuff." And he's filming it. And he kind of doesn't. He doesn't just jump right in and start doing, he's messing around. He's kind of making fun of the whole thing because he's a kid. And then he eventually says some stuff that's like, he says like one thing in his whole rant that's like a little bit racist. He's just like, "I hate that it's cool to be black." And then he says he hates Zionists, which there's an argument for that. And that's legitimate. And then like, you know, he says, "Cool it, Hillary Clinton," with the rhetorical bullshit. So like, I don't think he's fully there like Derek is, so it's a little believable to me that he's easily swayed back to not being a racist.
Okay. Yeah,
but
that's a good point.
But I am with you on like the, I think it's just like a symbolic moment where they're tearing down, there's some epic music, it's like, okay, we get it. Like I don't think that arc would happen that fast, in my opinion. I don't think that he would come out and be like, "Oh, this is all total bullshit." I think he'd be like, "Yeah, whatever," and he would maybe still hang out with his girlfriend, maybe still hang out with his friends. And just not, but that's not the movie that was written. But like, you know, maybe just kind of cool it and step back and not do violent stuff, you know, maybe try to educate them. I don't know. But, you know, there's so many different things that could have happened. We only got to deal with the movie that was written. But
yeah, well, let's get into any final points you guys want to make, because we're almost at time, and then we can get into final summary and review. And I don't know if we want to give it like curb stomps out of 10. That's probably in poor taste. How about number of prison tats?
Yeah.
They're folding underwear. How many
fold the towels? How fold the towels? How about that?
Yeah, how many fold the towels? There you go.
Controls the underwear.
I don't really have any more points. Nick, if you got anything?
Well, I actually had like one. I think that we didn't really touch on the Sweeney is his name, the principal or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He seems pretty libertarian, like because when Derek's in jail and he's talking about how he's basically saying like he used to be a big collectivist and he might have been like a Black Panther or something, and he's like, "It didn't do me any good to like just blame society for all of my personal problems, you know. I blamed God, I blamed white people and the government," and like, you know, you're right to blame the government for quite a bit of it. But like, He kind of just snaps him to make him become an individualist again or something like that, or at least more individualist. So I would say he's pretty libertarian. And at the beginning, when Danny gets in trouble for writing the Mein Kampf paper, he's like, well, you know, Murray, you tough luck. You assigned him, you know, you have to write a paper on anyone promoting, what is it, civil rights or something. He chose Hitler. But it's like, you kind of backed yourself into a corner there. I thought that was kind of cool. That guy was pretty principled. Like, he was pretty open-minded, you know. He was kind of like the libertarian voice of the movie in a way.
Yeah, and I kind of like that aspect of it. Like, why can't you talk about that stuff? If they're bad ideas, then put sunlight on them and show why they're bad. You know, but just to make something taboo, that almost makes it like something to look at subversively, and like it makes it more attractive in a way.
For sure. And if you're a disaffected person who doesn't fit in anyway, you're going to be more interested in what is this stuff that I'm not supposed to look into? Yeah.
Right. And then you're not going to get like these counter arguments because it's all in the shadows.
Exactly. Yeah, another reason not to, defeat it with straw man, you know, steel man the arguments, right? Like a lot of, I don't know, denunciations of anybody these days, it seems to be, is to just call them racist. And then that's just a catch all for anything we don't like. And that doesn't make anybody, I think, change their mind, because you're not actually dealing with their actual points. Like, if you were to tell Derek, like, you're just a racist, blah, 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 he's like, okay, but you didn't address any of the points I said. I just made about 15 good points and you just called me a racist. How is that an argument?
Right. Yeah. It ends the argument. It ends the debate, and it doesn't achieve anything.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, Robert, you want to lead us off with your final summary review and how many towels you folding over there?
Okay. So, how do you rank this one? I think it's a well-made film for the most part. I think it can be used from a variety of perspectives to forward any number of given agendas. I think you can use it a lot of different people. I think we've had quite a few movies where you can kind of use it as a teaching tool to forward any of your own particular viewpoints. It's a complex and it's a nuanced film. I didn't like the idea that the father questioning affirmative action is the slippery slope to being a neo-Nazi. I thought that was a bridge too far for the script. I lost respect for the script at that point. But for the most part, it's really well written. It's well acted. Edward Norton gives a fantastic performance. All the other ancillary characters do just fine. I don't know if there's any particular standouts, but you know, it's nothing. There's no sore thumbs out there that it's like, what is this guy doing here? All the characters seem to be fairly well believable, even if you're only getting little glimmers of them. It's a very interesting subject matter, because these days, in these hypersensitive times, if you say that the Nazis had any strong points to make, you're a horrible person and you are to be excommunicated from polite society. When that does nobody any good. You have to steel man the arguments. You have to point out and agree with, find points of agreement with even the most lost people sometimes. And so then you can convince them, because just calling them racist isn't going to convince them of anything. It's just going to help them turtle back into their shell, and you're not going to change their mind about anything. I think it's the laziest form of argumentation is to just ad hom, even if you're correct, even if you're saying, well, you're a racist and he is, it's not going to change his mind about anything, because he knows, he doesn't care. He thinks he's got really strong points as to why the blacks are this way or the Asians are this way or whatever. And I may think he's wrong, but I'm not going to just sit there and say he's racist. I'm going to say, okay, this is where we agree, this is where we disagree, and this is why I disagree with you on this part, and this is why you're going too far.
So I think it's a well-written film. It's open for lots of really good discussion. We could probably go for a really long time. And I feel like I should have taken better notes because there's some like stuff where I just wish I had a transcript of the film. And we could just go line by line, but that would just take forever. But this is one of those good films where you really could dissect it that much. So I'm going to fold 7.5 towels out of 10 towels. And hopefully the Nazis aren't going to rape me in the prison.
Oh, careful what you wish not for. I don't know. So I'm going to jump off and then we'll go to you, Nick. This is a movie that I hadn't seen in a long time, like I was saying in the pre-show. And I'm glad that I saw it again. It holds up really, really well. It's very well done. It has some very nice arcs in it and some cinematic tricks that kind of blend it together and make it work. I like that you open on this idyllic beach scene with like the boys choir kind of music. And then you get into this like really intense, really visceral and violent movie that has some really interesting takes on things. And then you kind of go out on the beach scenes again. So it kind of does a nice envelope of the movie. Ed Norton is a powerhouse in this thing. And it's I think he was nominated for an Academy Award for his acting. He didn't win, but I think Adrian Brody did that year. But really, really well done. I'd like to see more work by this director. I know that he kind of blackballed himself a little bit as he was so difficult to work with on producing this. But he has a really nice eye. I think he also did the cinematography for this. And so I would look forward to some more of his work and I'll look into it and see if there is more. And I'm going to give this 8 folded towels or maybe 4 medium sized drawers and 4 large sized drawers because I'm folding the underwear in the early part of the movie. And how about you, Nick? Let's go to you for your summary and review.
Yeah, I mean, for the movie that was written, you know, not for like, you know, how I could compare it to life today. I mean, I liked it a lot. And I think overall the message is good, you know, don't be a racist collectivist asshole. And look, I mean, the acting is amazing overall. And like you were saying, like there are some really cool cinematic tricks. Like the music played a lot to it. Like the basketball scene, there's like this intense music that's like, it's really just dudes playing basketball, but it sounds like, you know, it looks like it sounds like a battle, you know, but like, you know, but the arcs are really cool. Like when, you know, Edward Norton comes back, I mean it's badass because he's like he's good again and he fights people, and you know, so it's a really cool movie. I would probably give it also 8 draws or folded towels, probably 8 or 9. Like, and I used to it's weirdly, this is gonna sound bad, but it's a very quotable movie, I guess, and you probably wouldn't want to quote it in public, but like I've worked at, like I used to work at a pizza place in New York, and we just say messed up shit all the time there. So that's probably where I heard about this movie, actually. But, you know, it's fun. Like, a lot of the quotes are, like, really funny out of context. But, you know, they're horrible things to say to people. Anyways, it's really, really well written. I liked it a lot. I pretty much watched it, like, probably once a year for, like, since I saw it. So probably, like, 10 times, I'd say. So I thought it was a great movie.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for bringing it up. And thank you for being our guest. It's been a lot of fun. We'd love to have you back on again in the future. As long as we continue to do this thing that we call the Last Nighters podcast here, movie reviews from a free market perspective. And Robert, next week, we're going to be doing something that just got decided moments before we went on. And that is Mike C. coming back for Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, the George Clooney movie. You familiar with this movie?
Yeah, it's got what's his bucket playing an assassin, Barry something. He was like a game show host who was also a CIA hitman.
Yeah, yeah. So he suggested the movie just for me to watch it. And then we had what we were going to do next week. They had to push back a couple of weeks. So I was like, hey, Mike, we got an opening. So he's down to do it. And so that'll be next week. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, starring George Clooney, produced by Steven Soderbergh and Harvey Weinstein.
Now, wait a minute. No, George Clooney is not the star of the movie. It's what's his name? That was in like Charlie's Angels and stuff.
Well, you tell me, buddy. I haven't seen it yet. but I'm going to see it.
Yeah, no, it's Sam Rockwell.
Oh, Sam Rockwell. Yeah. Yeah. You like him.
Yeah. I mean, Clooney's in it, but yeah, the main character is Rockwell, who is, I think Rockwell is dynamite in most everything he's in. He has an incredible screen presence. He has a lot of fun in his characters.
Yeah. So that'll be a lot of fun. So yeah, Mike C coming back for a 15th or 16th time. So check it out next week when we come back for that, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. And Nick, people can find your work at thestatusquo.net for your co-hosting and producing abilities. And then also for your musical abilities, go to nickwhitenoise.com. And we'll, of course, have links to all of that on our show notes page at lastnighters.com/190. And thanks again. And do you have any final words for our audience before we get into some Kathleen Turner Overdrive, which is the Patreon bonus content we have for people?
Oh man, I don't know. Just don't judge a book by its cover. The movie has a dude with a swastika on his chest. It's like, it's a pretty good movie. So a lot of these, I saw this movie when I got into a lot of cult movies. So yeah, it's a great one. Check it out.
All right,
and yeah, check out my music and my podcast too, if you want.
Yeah, check those things out too. Highly recommended. All right, well that's it, everyone. So we'll say good night from last night. We'll see you guys next week. All right, I got a few more minutes of the Actual Anarchy podcast here, and I did an inadvertent right click instead of a left click, so that's why there was that little delay at the end there with the outro music not playing right on time, right on cue. But I wanted to throw this question out because as this movie has become somewhat more relevant, or at least people seem to think so, and they're writing articles about it as such, is this a movie that could be made in today's climate, or does it just get referenced and brought up as a relevant film? As a sort of historic relic, because I really think you'd have problems just even getting the imagery to be allowed to be out in the world these days, or some of these messages even being said. I've seen people get in trouble for performances reciting lines in a movie, and they'll get in trouble for saying them as if they were saying those lines as the individual person who's the actor. And so it just seems like a movie that would be really hard to make now. Robert, what's your take on that?
Well, yeah, the imagery for sure, and particularly in, say, like Germany or some parts of the EU where the swastika can't even be shown, as if it's the swastika that killed all the Jews. It's so stupid. It's just so stupid. They can't admit that it was the belief in authority and the going along with the insane ideologies that did it, that killed all the people. No, it was just the Nazis themselves. They were this unique evil, and it can never happen again as long as we hide it from modern eyeballs. It'll never come back again, because that's what radicalizes people, is seeing shapes and images. No, it's real stupid. Could it be made? I think it probably could. I don't know if this exact film could be made again, but I could definitely see. I mean, we saw Green Room, which is kind of, I mean, it had Nazis as the villains, and Nazis are kind of the villains in this movie too. Although it's a, you know, it features the redemption arc of the main character, but, and so maybe you're humanizing Nazis too much, I guess, maybe. I don't know. But you definitely, I mean, you see Nazis all the time. They're always the villains in video games, or there's a million World War II video games where you're endlessly mowing down Nazis. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there are definitely hypersensitive areas where you can't even reference things said by, you know, unmentionable people, canceled people, that kind of thing, because then that puts you in the same basket of deplorables or whatever. But I think you could, but it wouldn't exactly be the same. It would be more of another kind of more hardcore leftist teaching movie, as opposed to a more nuanced humanistic view.
Okay. All right. So you think this is the more nuanced humanistic view that probably couldn't be taken today? You could make something that's a little bit more like aggressively anti
like right.
white supremacy or whatever like that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's my general idea, but who knows?
Yeah. You know, one thing I thought that was interesting, and Nick, I wanted your take on this as well. When the police were talking about the Cameron guy, who's like the ringleader of this whole thing, they were like, yeah, he's pretty clean. We can't get him on anything, but he's openly like saying all this stuff, selling the paraphernalia, selling the books, you know, doing all these things that I think today you would get canceled for immediately. And like, at least in the UK, get arrested for hate speech or something like that. So it just seemed like a really weird thing. It was back when the First Amendment seemed to mean something. And the police were sort of respecting it, like, well, we can't really get him on anything because it's like a free speech thing. But I don't know if that would hold up these days. And unfortunately, I mean, I think that if you're going to have a First Amendment, recognize it and, you know, use it. I remember when the ACLU defended the right for white supremacists to march, right, and have free speech. That's the kind of ACLU I like. Where they're actually going to stand on principle, even though they despise the message that that is being espoused. I think that is the way that things should be approached. But Nick, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, I hate what you're saying, but I'll defend your right to say it. But yeah, to Cameron being like canceled today, I mean, I don't know. Social media wasn't around back then, so... It's not like he, I don't think he's spewing, I don't think he's like walking around hanging up flyers or something, whatever social media would be back then. I don't think he's walking around like making it a big public thing where he's like, black people this, you know, whatever. I think like, you know, they just find each other. Well, I don't know how they get to each other, but they just, they'll find him. He finds them, you know,
the old fashioned
punk show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like word of mouth networking. And so definitely he'd be canceled. Like he would be like a Richard, I guess he'd be like a Richard Spencer. He kind of reminds me of like a Charles Manson or something where he like didn't do anything, I guess, but he, you know, he went down
he got his followers to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, he would definitely be canceled though. And it wouldn't be, I think a lot of these guys, like, because there isn't social media, I'm totally just thinking this now, but I think that they wouldn't be as like brazenly racist. They would be saying, instead of, for example, like when Derek took his shirt off and was like, not welcome. He was saying the K word and he was calling him a Jew and stuff. I think more or less those guys today would be more or less calling them like a communist and a socialist. They might call him a Jew or something, but like they would be more or less talking about like, you know, you're a communist, you know, you're a leftist, you know, they'd be making fun of you're a progressive instead of you're a Jew. Like, I think they would be trying to get to more, I guess, reasonable points about a person, even though I don't know if Murray is a socialist. He's probably, you know, pretty left wing, but I don't know. I just think it'd be totally different today because there's social media.
Yeah.
Which wasn't around back then.
I saw somebody claim that being called a globalist was like a anti-Semitic slur now. So you're not saying that they would call them these other things as like dog whistles, but that they would try to be more specific to attack the ideology or philosophy of those people rather than pick on their racial characteristics.
Yeah. Or they would attack like statistics that are perceived about them. Like a lot of them today, which a lot of us say this stuff today, a lot of like reasonable libertarians, but like we don't bring it up every 5 seconds, but like it's a, you know, 13% of the population, 50% of blah, 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 stuff like that. Statistics. They'll bring stuff up like that. I think a lot of guys today will say stuff like that. They'll put it in meme format and they'll just, you know, be like, you know, if there's like something that a Jew does that like Ben Shapiro said something stupid and then someone will be like chosen ones. It's just like, though instead, yeah, they kind of dog whistle, but it's half the time they're kind of making sense. They'll be like, oh, you're a socialist, you're a neocon, you love war or something. It's like, yeah, I mean, I agree with that. His religion or his race doesn't have anything to do with why I think he's bad. But so I think it's just a different ball game today. I think back then they were only in their echo chamber. You know, he was only hanging out with like his Cameron was only hanging out with like his Nazi following, and then you know, getting them to do stuff. Today, it's like there might be there's not like a huge Nazi thing today. So I can't really speak on that. But like there probably is like, you know, like right wing groups or something that are anti-neocon and anti-leftist that are super critical of Israel. I mean, I'm pretty critical of Israel, so, but I'm not in like groups where they're super racist. So I, you know, I can't speak on it too much, but I don't think it would be as brazenly racist as it, you know, as the movie portrays. I think they had to do that too for the film to make it so, oh, this guy is so evil, you know, he's saying all this.
Right. But it also seems like current day is like almost anything is labeled as racist. So therefore almost everything is racist. But it sort of loses its point, you know?
And I'm speaking on like the hypothetical, like 600 people out there who are like that radically neo-reactionist. Like, there's not like a huge movement of neo-reactionists. It's maybe in groups on like 4chan or Reddit there are, but it's mostly just for just to be a jackass and to post memes, I think, you know?
Yeah. Lots of trolling.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of memes. Edgy, spicy memes. But
yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm friends with a couple of like guys who are kind of like that. And I still don't know if they're serious or because they're rarely really, really funny. So I'm like, do you actually think that you came from giants? Like, or are you just like really a really good troll? Like, I just don't know.
All right. Well, hey, this has been a lot of fun. We should end it there and get into some of our Kathleen Turner Overdrive bonus content for people. But we'll be back next week with Mike C for Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Check out Nick's work at nickwhitenoise.com for his musical stuff, and also thestatusquo.net for his podcast work and production work in making podcasts. And we'll see you guys all next week. And you got to find the right buttons. And we'll get into some Kathleen Turner Overdrive right after this. Maximum Freedom, everyone. Peace out.
The Chipmunks. C-H-I-P-M-U-N-K. We're the Chipmunks, guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot, 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 doot.